WNYC Studios is supported by the Natural Resources Defense Council. Using science, the law, and people power, NRDC is committed to confronting the climate crisis, protecting public health, and safeguarding nature. They address the impact of fossil fuels on communities and our environment. They help protect wildlife, public lands, and irreplaceable ecosystems that all living things depend on. They work to enact policies for clean air, clean water, and access to nature for all. You can help NRDC safeguard the Earth for future generations. Visit nrdc.org/WNYC for more information.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
If there's one comedian who's everywhere these days, in fact, I think I just saw her on the side of a bus, it's Amy Schumer. She's running her own Comedy Central series. She wrote and starred in her first feature film. She hosted MTV's Video Music Awards, and just recently, HBO released Amy Schumer Live at the Apollo. Amy's comedy is a mix of the political, the raunchy, and the scathing, and it also has an undercurrent of sadness. She's very good at making you squirm, too. Amy, I can't help but ask this question. I grew up in a household that sounds, I can't begin to tell you, very similar to mine.
Really?
You bet. I had a mother with multiple sclerosis and eventually a father who lost his business. He was a dentist because he had Parkinson's. You don't want a shaky-handed Parkinsonian dentist.
No, you don't.
It's kind of like a bad Buster Keaton movie.
Yeah.
It sounds like there was a lot of tumult but a lot of humor where you were growing up and in your house. Can you kind of give us a picture of that?
Sure. Is that how you guys dealt with it too?
With insane humor and but between brothers more than
right,
with the
more
parents.
Than to the parents. Yeah, that makes sense. My siblings and I are close. I have a younger sister. She's 3.5 years younger, and my older brother is 4 years older, so I'm right in the middle. The first sort of horrific thing that happened was that my brother has a different father than us, and his dad died. And I remember he told me, he was 12, I was 8, and he told me, he said, my dad died. And I just smiled, like I had the biggest smile on my face because I was so uncomfortable and I didn't know how to process that emotion. So it just went to like, you know, the ultimate sadness just went to like a smile. And he just looked at me like I was insane and I felt horrible, you know. And I think that that's probably in some ways still in him, and the shame of that is still in me. But that's been my reaction to real tragedy. The only way I can deal with it is to find a way to laugh about it. And I'm better now. I was 8 years old, and now somebody gives me bad news, I react like a human being. But my dad got MS.
How old were you?
I was 11, and it came on loud and strong, and I'm the middle child trying to keep everybody laughing, and I really did. We all really did. It would be like, you know, seeing your dad that vulnerable and human, it's so awful you can't believe you're seeing it, so it becomes funny. You're like you, no one should ever have to see their parents
weak
and shitting themselves at JFK Airport. Like, you just shouldn't have to see your parents this vulnerable. And we would find a way to laugh about it always. The whole family. There was nothing that was off limits.
Including your father.
Yeah. Still with my dad.
He still has his wits about him.
Yeah. He's got some dementia. Like, he forgets a lot. He'll call me 3 times in a day and be like, why haven't I talked to you? And I'm like, we've already talked.
How does it become something that you're not just funny in front of your family at dinner or cracking wise in the back of a classroom in Long Island or wherever?
Yeah.
And it's something that you begin to see as a possibility to be and become and to shape? And how did that happen for you?
It was my brother and sister were my favorite people to make laugh, and then my parents, and then the kids at school. And I loved it. I loved it because it was fun for me. It wasn't this need for approval, like because I'm ornery, you know. I liked making myself laugh. And then did plays, and then, you know, I tried stand-up. I just tried it. I never thought I would ever be a comedian. I liked it. And I was like, oh, I'll do it again. And I kind of just did it kind of.
Because the reward is right there and then?
Yeah, it was like if you're, you know, you do plays your whole life and then you're in college and you get to perform and you're doing, and then all of a sudden it's just like, boom, you're waiting tables and you want to perform. And it's a really good way to get on stage and, yeah. and perform.
Amy, at what point do you think that your work as a collection of jokes and decent performing skills and all the rest moves to something more, not elevated in a kind of pompous way, but more serious, that you there's an idea behind what you're doing. There yeah. are ideas behind what you're doing.
Yeah. And well, I think you just evolve. As a comic, I was just jokes. I was just set up punchline, and you're just trying to get laughs. You're yeah. trying to get better. You're figuring it out. So I used to play a character, really, kind of like a deranged, just like white, rich party girl, maybe Republican, I don't know. But I do have an agenda now, and it's
how would you describe it?
My agenda?
Yeah.
To make people laugh and feel better.
To make them feel better.
Mm-hmm.
So on Inside Amy Schumer, you and I consume the show the way I think a lot of people do, maybe most people do, which is to say
most
I watch.
Most people don't.
But in terms of one sketch at a time yeah. instead of watching it on the network. But mm-hmm. there was one that was just stunning. It's called I'm Sorry, and it's yeah. it's four women on a doing a panel discussion.
Mm-hmm. You know what, just for time, I think we'll take an audience question. Okay, sir, in the back?
Yeah, my question is to the first broad there. You do peps and shit, right?
Oh, I work with neuroprotective peptides. So what? Our team...
Forget it. I thought you could help me with my stomach and whatever.
I'm sorry, I should have made it more clear. You're in pain. You want me to get you something for your stomach?
Yeah, it'd be nice.
Yeah, I'm going to run out. Does anybody need anything? Or?
No, sorry.
No?
Sorry.
Okay.
Amy, why don't you just stay here? I mean, we can send someone out, but you're part of our panel, so.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
Well, I want to know how the sausage is made, how the process is. When you're a stand-up comedian, you're yeah. doing this by yourself.
Right. We were talking about just how women say I'm sorry so much. You know, it's not like revolutionary stuff. People know that happens, but I was like, we got to do a scene about that on the show. And then I pitched it in the writer's room. And then we figure out what could it be, like a panel. And people are like, oh, yeah, like a panel. And then we came up, it was like women's innovating woman. Like we just came up with some horrible name that could be real. And then
how many people are in the room?
Seven people plus a writer's assistant and a dog. And and it's nice. It's totally different than stand-up.
And you prefer it now?
No, I love the different things. I like writing a lot. I love collaborating.
You make a joke out of yourself, about your body, about your sex life or your fictionalized sex life or whatever mm-hmm. it is.
Yeah.
And that's a price to pay, and it's also there's a price in that a lot of people don't get it.
I'm surprised by how many people do get it. But the people who don't get it are
Why
not.
Why do you say that?
I think I've had a low opinion sometimes of with the way I've seen our country, which is dirty comedy clubs for 10 years.
Yeah.
I was so happy when Obama won. I just was like, oh, there's no way this country, like, we're just too, people are just too stuck in old ways and they're too racist and it, but I'm pleasantly surprised by America all the time. But if someone doesn't get what I'm doing or misinterprets it for the truth, if I say something like mm-hmm. really ignorant. And it's clearly I'm making a joke about a person that would say that, then I'm like, well, that's not someone I would ever want to have a conversation with or want them to be in my audience. If somebody hears that I support Hillary Clinton and that makes them not want to come see me live, well, good. Yeah. Then don't come.
No,
there's so many other comedians that you can go see.
How are you feeling about her right now?
Love her.
Just straight up, uncritically, no problems.
No, I'm not like no problems.
So what do you wish she'd get better at?
I mean, she's struggling with the millennials right now, which is who she should be cleaning up with.
What's your contact with her?
We call each other every night before we go to sleep.
Really? Milk, cookies, and Hillary.
Night, Hill. No, we've just met once, but I plan on being involved with her campaign.
What will you do?
Whatever they want, however I can be most useful, you know, I think, which will probably be very sparingly. Nobody wants me to be the face of her campaign, but, you know, just...
But did you, last time around, it seemed to me, and I'm not the only one, that she was scared of feminism as a forward issue in the campaign. She didn't, the cliche was she didn't want to make too big a deal of
well,
being a
smart.
Woman.
For,
was it?
Yeah, because... that scares off men and women alike because they still don't know what that word means. Because when she's honest and she's just like firing stuff off, you're like, oh, she's a badass, you know?
I was on a show one night at Seth Meyers, and I'm sitting next to, as if in a dream, Jerry Seinfeld.
Yeah.
And he went into a long rant that he feels uncomfortable about telling a certain kind of joke because he's going to get attacked by what he sees as the PC police.
Sure.
On the other hand, what he sees as being PC also is make sure that we don't say some really ugly things and hurt a lot of people. How do you feel about that issue? Do you find that there's a lot of pressure on you not to do things, not to say this, and a condemning atmosphere? You think he's right?
Yeah, it's such a gotcha society. But I feel like the minute I really am worried about that and I don't want to say something that I think is really funny, then it's like you're dead in the water.
When we're punching up,
mm-hmm.
punching against power, punching against bigotry,
yeah,
all bets are off. Great.
Yeah.
But when you're punching down.
Sure. Well, like Jim Norton right now, who's one of my favorite comedians, he talks about how, like, what are we not allowed to talk about right now? We are not allowed to talk about Caitlyn Jenner. You know, like all the late night shows, everyone's like, nothing, no humor to be found here. And he's like, well, I'd like to take a shot at it, you know? And it's like, I support Caitlyn. But Jimmy's like, I've been supporting transsexuals for years.
What kind of reactions do you get?
People love it.
Yeah.
And it feels good to be like, yes, why are we all pretending?
How did you react? You got criticized about the question of race and making jokes about race.
Yeah. It didn't hurt my feelings.
It did not.
No, because I feel like if there's a part of you that's sensitive to that, that it's probably because there's a little truth in it. Nothing works 100% of the time except Mexicans. Yeah, that's a joke. It's old. It's an old joke of mine. I wouldn't write it now just because that's not the stuff I'm doing. I don't think it's particularly brilliant. The punch of that is supposed to be like, oh, that's a horrible thing to say. And that's why we're laughing, because it's horrible. I don't apologize for that joke. You know, any jokes, I have so many. Like, part of my character was being kind of like
vaguely
racist.
Do you ever have any old material you think, you know, maybe that one is, that doesn't work?
I wouldn't do any of my old jokes now.
Because they feel stale, or because you thought they were offensive or off in some way?
Because they feel stale, and I have a bigger audience now, and it's more people are looking to me, and I have become in some ways a role model. And so I have more responsibility, but I didn't. I didn't then.
You had a choice a while back. It's no longer a secret. It wasn't a secret for very long that the Jon Stewart people came to you and said, we'd like you to do this show.
Right.
Or at least think about it.
Yeah.
You didn't want to.
I thought about it a lot. But yeah, I didn't want to.
What was the thought process about it, and why did you come to the conclusion it wasn't a good idea for you?
I'd have to be in that same building every day for 5 years.
Were you tempted?
Yeah, I thought about it. I thought, okay, I can give everyone my family jobs, and I can really, I mean, just like the, you know, this stuff like that. And it's New York, and it's, yeah, I just kind of didn't want to know what I was going to do for the next half a decade.
And your horizon now has to be limitless. How do you look at it?
I just want to do stuff that scares me.
And what is that?
Directing bigger things scares me and excites me. I've been enjoying being on camera less and less. Maybe it's because I'm aging poorly. but I'm like a stay in your lane type of girl. Like, I mean, you know, we all like will humor people when they're like, oh, I play the tuba now and I'm going on the road with a band and I only want to talk about the tuba. And people are just like, okay, but can you tell two jokes? You know, I'm not that. Like, I'll do dramatic. I know I'll go back to doing plays. And
now, is there any concern that your life is going to get so good that it maybe is not comic material? I noticed that
Nope.
But you know, you were
not at all.
I watched you at the Apollo, and I realized she's telling a story about having courtside seats at a Laker game.
Sure.
But you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So if your life becomes private planes and courtside seats,
yeah.
Is there a price to pay in your work?
I think so. Not the level I'm at, especially because, like, this is my first time having courtside seats, and it did not go well for me. And things always backfire. You know, just it's always like I think I have my foot in the door, and, like, am
smacked.
I really – yeah, and I just get ripped right back down.
You know, we have trouble – when we publish fiction every week.
It's fiction?
Some of it. Some of it. And there's, for most writers, after a certain age, they stop writing short stories because the market is telling them novels. We want other things. And so it's very rare that you get a Jhumpa Lahiri or Alice Munro who keep writing short stories to the end of their careers and lives. A lot of comedians stop doing stand-up the minute they can for whatever economic or creative reason. You want to put that behind you with this performance, or you wanted to keep doing that?
No, I'm working on my next special. I'm hitting the road hard. I'm out there.
You're writing new material all the time.
Yeah.
And thematically, is it different, or do you find that it's you're digging the same?
It is different. It's because I'm living life, and so I have a niece now, and I'm a woman in Hollywood now, which, you know, I don't feel like that, but I can speak to it at least. And
you're not going to move, are you?
Ew.
That's the reaction I wanted to hear. Amy, thanks so much for coming.
Thanks for having me.
The indomitable Amy Schumer. Just this past weekend, she appeared yet again in support of gun control legislation with her cousin, New York Senator Chuck Schumer.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.